I could have your attention. I call this meeting to order. I would ask everyone to stand and we'll have our clerk and manager of legislative services for council, Brenda Percy, open up our meeting with a word of prayer.
O Lord, our Heavenly Father, teach us to put to good account whatever talents thou hast lent us, to discuss with patience and zeal the municipal affairs which have come before us this day, through Jesus Christ our Lord. Amen.
Amen. Let me take this opportunity to welcome each and every one of you here. If I would at this time ask members of council, has anybody any pecuniary interest they wish to declare at this time? If not, we'll allow that to be reflected in our minutes, and if during the course of this meeting members of council find themselves in conflict, notification of to the chair, and of course stating what the conflict is, we'll have that so entered. That brings us now to the minutes of our previous meeting. What is your pleasure relative thereto? Councillor Sutton, if you would.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Move the minutes as listed.
Motion by Councillor Sutton, supported by Councillor Pilon. Any discussions, comments, concerns? Councillor Puget.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The first in-camera minutes of January 9th, 2012, it does not disclose the reason why Deputy Mayor Sutherland and myself left the room. We had stated the reasons why. And the in-camera minutes of January 23rd, 2012, it does not state that two votes were taken.
Would we deal with that, please?
January 9th minutes, it does not state the reason, because under the Municipal Act, the clerks to record the minutes without note or comment. And then January 23rd in-camera minutes, I would have to, if council could just give me a moment, I'll double check what I have here.
Okay. I'll give you a few minutes to do that,
okay,
if you'd be so kind. Puget, you had your hand up.
Yeah, just for clarification, for the January 9th meeting, I would not obliged to state the reasons we left the room.
Well, you...
We did. We both stated the reasons. Mm-hmm. So that should be included in that report.
Brenda's going to look that up here and she'll respond.
Councillor Puget, January 23rd minutes, you're saying that the confidential version does not include the votes? It does.
It doesn't.
It includes one vote that was held?
But two votes were actually taken. On the same subject.
I would have to report back to council, look into that further.
Okay. And all right.
Council would like to hear a motion without those two sets of minutes.
Yeah. What we can do is we can hold them through. It's all right to move in supporter.
Absolutely.
We'll hold
those. Take those off. Yeah.
And then we'll just do the three. Would that be okay?
Yes.
And those three would be the regular minutes and the backflow,
yes,
and of course the special minutes of council. All in favor of those minutes? Opposed? Carried unanimously. That brings us to delegation. We have several people wanting to speak tonight on the artificial water fluoridation.
Yes, the artificial water fluoridation. The first speaker is Kimberly DeYoung.
Kimberly, please. We have a little button on there you can push for the mic and...
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and council members. My name is Kim DeYoung, and I'm with a group called Fluoride Free Windsor. I'm here tonight to talk about artificial water fluoridation because several concerned residents of Amherstburg asked me to. The product Amherstburg uses to fluoridate their water supply is a silico fluoride called hydrofluorosilicic acid. It is a waste product from the phosphate fertilizer industry. I don't have time tonight to speak to the industrial process that occurs, but I have provided you with this information as part of my accompanying documents. Depending on the batch, the hydrofluorosilicic acid contains trace amounts of the contaminants listed here. And please note the Hazardous Waste Act does not permit the disposal of hydrofluorosilicic acid into our environment. By putting this product into our municipal water supply, dilution has become the solution for industry's pollution. Artificial water fluoridation proponents like to say that fluoride is naturally occurring. What they're talking about is calcium fluoride, which can be held with your bare hands. The fluoride toxicity is reduced by the presence of the calcium. Amherstburg would have a level of naturally occurring fluoride in its drinking water before the addition of the hydrofluorosilicic acid, which is a man-made waste product that is so toxic it'll eat through glass and concrete, and it's so corrosive that workers handling it must wear special protective equipment. So listed here are the various classifications of hydrofluorosilicic acid. When considering the relative toxicity of fluoride, please notice that it is slightly more toxic than lead and slightly less toxic than arsenic. We go out of our way to avoid arsenic and lead, but intentionally add fluoride to our water supply. It would cost industry about $7,000 a ton to properly dispose of hydrofluorosilicic acid, yet we pay roughly about $1,000 a ton to add it to our drinking water. There are at least four pieces of legislation that artificial water fluoridation violates: the Canadian Environmental Protection Act, the Safe Drinking Water Act, Species at Risk Act, and the Clean Water Act. These legislations have in common the precautionary principle, which states that if an action or policy has a suspected risk, the risk only need be suspected, of causing harm to the public or the environment, that the burden of proof that it is not harmful falls on those taking the action. So we ask, where are the toxicological studies and the clinical data that for hydrofluorosilicic acid to show that it's safe for us to ingest every day over a lifetime and safe for us to dump back into our environment? Something councillors really need to consider is the statutory standard of care that takes effect on January 1st, 2013. This addition to the Safe Drinking Water Act puts an unprecedented duty of care on the municipal councillors responsible for their drinking water system. I've provided you with a provincial document titled Taking Care of Your Drinking Water, a guide for members of municipal councils. On page 8, it has the wording for this standard of care. And note on page 32, it shows the ideal water treatment model, and there's no fluoridation step shown. Health Canada does not regulate hydrofluorosilicic acid, and everyone agrees that too much fluoride is harmful. We are exponentially exposed to more sources of fluoride today than we were 50 years ago. We have no regulating body monitoring all these sources and no health agency assessing our residents and our environment to make sure we're not getting too much. We asked our medical officer of health how he knows we aren't already getting enough fluoride from other sources, and he asked, what other sources? And admitted that our community has never been assessed to determine our fluoride levels or our fluoride intake from all sources. These are pictures of dental fluorosis, the harm that fluoridation proponents admit is caused by ingesting fluoride. Health Canada states fluoridation is unlikely to cause ill health effects. When I'm considering what is best for my children, and I hope when you're considering what is best for Amherstburg residents, we'd like to hear something more reassuring than unlikely to cause harm. Because dentists are not trained on fluoride toxicity, they recognize this damage as cosmetic. But fluoride toxicity experts know that dental fluorosis is the visible sign of fluoride poisoning. So why are we listening to dentists when it comes to deciding if we should drink fluoride? In their office, they warn us not to swallow the Health Canada regulated pharmaceutical grade fluoride. And even if they were individually opposed to water fluoridation, and many are, pardon me, they could not voice such an opposing viewpoint. When we asked the Essex County Dental Society if they had statistics of the dental fluorosis and the dental caries rates of our county's fluoridated and non-fluoridated communities, they said they had none. And so we're left with anecdotal stories which are not scientific, and we all know children from fluoridated communities that have tooth decay. These are all genuine ads from the same era that brought us fluoridation. The health agencies assured us that these products were safe and effective, but science and experience eventually showed us that the harm they caused was not worth any perceived benefit. Fluoridation is no different. Science we know today and our increased exposure to fluoride has shown that this policy of adding unregulated industrial grade fluoride to our water supply is unsafe, unethical, and unnecessary. So we recommend that Amherstburg Council follow the precautionary principle and discontinue artificial water fluoridation to be more protective of all constituents and adhere to environmental legislation. Should this council vote to cease fluoridation, you'll join the ranks of most of Essex County, most of Canada, and most of the world, including Europe, where several countries have even banned the import of goods containing fluoride. These lists here are just a small sampling of fluoride-free communities in Canada, and in the last 15 months alone, 13 Canadian municipalities have stopped fluoridation. I thank you all for your time.
Thank you very much. Any questions of council at this time to Kimberly? If not, I didn't. Councilor Pilon?
Maybe just real quickly, you know, I've been getting a lot of emails on this from residents, from professional. I guess you, I don't know what your title is, really.
I'm a mother.
Okay, so you've just sort of gotten on this, you want it. Now, does Windsor use it? Does Windsor have it? It does,
of course they do.
But what I was going to say is, I haven't got not one email have I received that says they want it. So, you know, I'm not a specialist by any means in this. All I can do is read all the information. But you've been putting out a good argument as to why not to use it. But I guess my question a little further on would be, why did we start it then?
I think that's an excellent question. And I think at the time, 50 years ago, we had a lot less science than we have today. I think the science that was done showed there was a benefit. Our overall exposure was extremely low compared to what we are exposed to today. If there's a benefit to be had, we have other places other than our life-giving water. So you can use your toothpaste. You can look at their food database where all fluoride is available. So if there's a benefit, you can get it elsewhere. But our water is something that should be a little bit pure and not used to deliver medication. And some people are not okay with it. They don't do well with it. So,
you know what? I can speak from just... I lived in the county, and I drank well water until 10, 12 years ago, maybe 15 years ago. And I got all my teeth, you know, and my kids have. And I've never heard of any problem of people with their teeth drinking well water.
Councilor Davies, followed by Councilor DePasquale.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. If you could just answer a couple of other questions. That certainly, I have also been receiving a lot of mail in support of ending fluoridation. Two questions. I know Montreal has never had fluoridation. I know Toronto has had it for quite a while. And there's some question of bone fragility in bones of the Toronto area versus Montreal. Can you talk a little bit about that study?
I haven't read the study. I would suggest you ask the person coming up after me to give you more details. What I do know, because I'm in contact with the person who conducted the study, that there's way more fluoride found in the bones of people in the fluoridated community than there is. So you're talking about an accumulation over time and then increased potential hip fractures. And I'll
say the
rest
of my
thank you, Mr. Mayor. Question through you. Which communities in Essex County are not fluoridating?
All of them except for yourself and those serviced by Windsor Utility Commission.
Follow up, go ahead.
Maybe I should go through you to Lou. Are we using chlorine right now in our water treatment loop?
Fluoride.
Or fluoride, I'm sorry.
Mr. Mayor, at the present time, we are not. The system has been ceased temporarily until repairs are made to the system and the methodology of providing the fluoride.
Councillor Sutton, followed by Councillor Pouget.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, through you. If there was one study that you would point council to review, take a look at, that would help us make up our collective minds on the fluoride issue, what study would that be, and why would you push that one over the countless others that we've been inundated with over the past month?
So please, no, I am not a professional.
Absolutely.
I would suggest you ask the person who has probably
Better.
Read all those. But from my colloquial perspective, I would say the National Research Council's review of all the study.
Councillor Pouget.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor, first. Through you to Lou. Lou, when did we stop fluoridating?
Mr. Mayor, the system was suspended in April of last year.
And I was unaware of that. I'm not sure council was made aware of it as a group. But did we make our public aware of the fact that we had stopped fluoridation?
Mr. Mayor, council was made aware of that, and the health unit was also made aware of it at that time.
Well, the reason I'm asking is because when the health unit came before us, they told us we'd stop fluoridating. The mayor stated that we were still fluoridating, and I was under the impression that we still were. That I hadn't.
I think several were at that time. But he had notified, you had notified the health unit? And
yes,
this council?
Yes, Mr. Mayor, the health unit was notified.
And this council?
And this council was notified. The
but not at that meeting.
No.
No, we weren't aware of it when Mr. Hyman came before us, correct?
The council was notified at the time that the system was suspended.
And how long was that?
It was April of last year.
I'm not going to put him on the spot because he could have, but I don't recall it. Councilor David, you had your hand up.
Yeah, I don't recall getting a letter or anything like that. I've seen the CCs that went from the Ministry of the Environment to all of the different groups. That was back in April of 2011. I inquired several months ago, and that's how I.
But the fact of the matter, I don't think the issue was when. I certainly will take Lou's word. He said he's notified council. He notified the health unit. That, in effect, he's saying until such time as the wastewater treatment plant that's being it hasn't been done until you get your operations right. You're saying with the water treatment plant.
Mr. Mayor, in regards to the fluoride, I was in touch with our consulting engineers today, CH2M Hill, and they are finishing up the draft report this week, and we should see something by next week as far as their recommendations on the program to be reestablished with upgrades.
With water treatment, yeah. Councilor Pilon?
Thank you. So then before any work begins in the plant, this will come to us, and then council can make the determination at that time.
Mm-hmm. Councilor Pusher.
And just further to that, and I don't want to belabor this, but I really do think that the public should be made aware of the fact that we are not fluoridating right at this time.
Anyone else? If not, thank you very much for your presentation. And I say that we will receive all of them at the end. Okay.
The next delegate is Heather Gingrich, International Medical Geology Association.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and Council. My name is Heather Gingrich, for the record, and I'm the director of the Canadian chapter of the International Medical Geology Association. I've been asked to come and present new research and information to you that was not provided to you by Drs. Frank and Dr. Hyman. Before me, most likely because it is not perceived as being their mandate, and they would not be aware of the information that I would present to you because their professional associations and their colleges do not perceive it as being their job. So since it is my job, I'm recognized as an expert in fluoride toxicity in North America by the United Nations. I was the sole author of the fluoride toxicity chapter in the United Nations publications that was put out for the International Year of Planet Earth in 2010, which I believe have been made available to you, the relevant sections. So I'm going to speak to you briefly about what we know about environmental effects and effects to pregnant women and infants with regards to artificial water fluoridation. So to bring you up to speed with regards to the environmental regulations, which have not historically been part of the discussion about whether or not a municipality should artificially fluoridate its water supply, is the fact that going back, Environment Canada determined that the guideline for the protection of aquatic species was 0.12 milligrams per liter. I'm not exactly sure what the level of fluoride being added here in Empersburg was. But we do know that in Windsor and Tecumseh and LaSalle, it's a level of 0.65, so clearly much in excess of the federally legislated guidelines. Here is a schematic of your watershed. So you get your water out of the Detroit River, as does Windsor. And when you pull it, when Windsor pulls out their water out of the Detroit River, it is at a level of 0.10 milligrams per liter, so under the guideline. By the time it is returned to the watershed, it is somewhat in excess of that, because not only are you adding the 0.65 or up to the 0.65 level of fluoridation, there will also be sources of fluoride added that from the municipal system and also from runoff from agricultural operations, industrial operations, what have you. And we are not doing any monitoring to find out how much over the 0.12 guideline we have. So to show you why, oh, and I'm sorry for the yellow font, to show you why that this is potentially damaging to aquatic species, I'll take you back to a high school biology lesson about food chains. So the caddisfly is the sensitive indicator species that the 0.12 milligrams per liter guideline is based on. And they have adverse effects to their population at that level. They feed the eastern sand darter, which is protected under the species at risk, which is in turn a food source for the crayfish, which is not so much of a problem, except for that the fluoride would be bioaccumulating going up the food chain. And the crayfish would then be food for the turtles. This one is the spiny softshell turtle, and is also a species at risk. Now, it's interesting to note that 7 out of 8 species of Ontario turtles are currently on species at risk list. When we see effects in the turtle population, that is a clear indication that there is a water chemistry problem. Next on the list of effects are going to be mammals, typically, and the smallest ones and the ones at critical stages of development. So though it would seem a little shocking to consider a human fetus an aquatic species, physiologically it is a fair comparison. Now, it is also important to note that Health Canada not only has not been doing any surveillance for adverse effects, either dental or non-dental, for fluoride, but they have never determined what the safe exposure level for human fetus is, and which is not the original intent of Health Canada. When everybody thinks of what Health Canada is doing with their tax dollars, there is some expectation that there has been some safety guidelines established and that there's some monitoring happening. Unfortunately, that does not appear to be the case. So different sources of fluoride to the Detroit River. Municipal water fluoridation is not the only one, but it is certainly the one that we have the most control over. The others include domestic and agricultural phosphates, road salts, personal care products, domestic and industrial cleaners and solvents, pesticides and pharmaceuticals, atmospheric fallout, natural municipal discharge of groundwater. It is important to mention atmospheric fallout, because prior to our discussions about fluoride pollution of water, it was determined that atmospheric fluorides coming from industry were responsible for more crop damage than all of the other atmospheric pollutants combined by the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Now, the other thing is that when we throw these atmospheric pollutants containing inorganic fluoride up into the atmosphere, they will come down, and they come down into our water supply. This is also an important aspect of the propriety of adding artificial fluoride to a municipal water system, because in fact you're providing a smokescreen for polluting industries. It is not possible, because there's only one stable isotope of fluoride, to determine whose fluoride it is, and it really undermines all of the source water protection and other activities when it's municipalities are actually providing a smokescreen for industry. We can't go after them and we can't regulate them if we're adding to the problem. And as I said, there is no monitoring downstream from the water treatment plant, so we have no idea what we are contributing to the Detroit River, which becomes other people's drinking water supply further on. In terms of the crossover now with human health, which is what medical geologists do. We try to bring environmental science and health science together so that we have a more complete view of the picture. Listed on this graph are different elements that are added to the water supply, and these are only elements that we track. There are probably countless organic contaminants, pesticides, industrial solvents, whatnot, that we're not even testing for. We only test for 1/3 of the periodic table. This may have been acceptable 20 years ago when we didn't have the technology to get to the other elements, but now it costs about $160 to get a complete view of the periodic table. We just haven't worked it into legislation. So as you can see, the levels of contaminants and fluoride itself that we're adding not only are, you know, above toxic levels for aquatic species, but they're also very much more above for protection of human infants. And we can see that there are certain limitations to the Ontario drinking water standards. They're just not rigorous enough. And the other thing to remember is that the total daily fluoride toxic intake for an infant is only 0.7 milligrams per liter, or milligrams per day from all sources. So I'm not aware of what level you were fluoridating to, but if an infant drinks 0.78 milliliters of feeds per day, you're cozying up really close to the toxic level and you blew right by the adequate level. And it's not to say that in this day and age it's possible to have an inadequate fluoride exposure, because we have it from a variety of sources. All the fluoride has to do is make it into the maternal bloodstream, and the developing fetus will see 100% of that. So again, we have various exposures. Everything that's in the air that you inhale, it gets absorbed through the skin. Pesticide residues and various foods also contain naturally high levels of fluoride. Anything fluoride in plants goes for the leaves. So anything like spinach or tea, you're going to have naturally high fluoride. Cosmetics, anything that makes it sparkly, that's a mineral called phlogopite, and it gets absorbed through the skin. And supplements and vitamins, 20% or thereabouts of pharmaceuticals right now are fluorinated. And I contributed to a Toxopedia article with Dr. Hardy Limeback outlining just the overexposure that is possible from pharmaceuticals alone. Toothpaste, again, there's a reason why there's a poison control label on toothpaste in the United States, and then what we're getting in our water. And again, we have absolutely no surveillance. So the thing that public health in 2012 needs to understand, that to protect the unborn and the newborn from things, toxins like fluoride, there are certain unique aspects of physiology that you have to consider, that the blood-brain barrier is not fully formed, that the placenta is not able to block toxins of that type either, the kidneys don't fully develop until about the age of 4, and that when you consider their body weight, infants ingest a lot more water relative to adults, and that it slowly builds up over a lifetime. The average person consumes 55,000 liters of water over a lifetime, which is about 315 bathtubs full. So even small amounts of a substance that slowly accumulates over time are going to have effects. Maybe not overnight, as we saw in Walkerton, but it's going to gradually show up over a lifetime. And then there's the generational effect. The longest running toxicology study in humans concerning sodium fluorides, not even hydrofluorosilicic acids, only ran for 8 years, and the children that were studied started at the age of 2, so they were not exposed during gestation or during early infancy. What we see is that in the first generation of exposure, you'll have certain vulnerable populations. So in the case of humans, it would be those that are blonde hair, blue-eyed, and just very sensitive to environmental factors. They would show some signs. Second generation, you'd have a little more, but the wheels really don't fall off until the third generation of accumulated exposure. We are now in the third generation of accumulated exposure, and I believe, although I have no data to back it up because nobody does these studies, Health Canada does not use our tax dollars that way, that we are seeing an increased incidence of those diseases that would logically be related to fluoride overexposure, including cancer, heart disease, diabetes, and mood disorders. So the minorities that are at risk of fluoride overexposure are those, again, that are most sensitive, pregnant, lactating mothers, fetuses, and young children. There is actually a small percentage of the population that will have an anaphylactic reaction to fluorides that they would say get in their dentist, or even that which we would consume just in the drinking water. The elderly, anybody over 65, your bone turnover is so low that you can't. This is why we see increased hip fractures and osteoporosis in fluoridated communities versus non-fluoridated communities. Diabetics, those with cardiovascular disease and renal disease, you can read the list. If you add up the best case scenario, we're talking about 98% of the population. If we add up the worst case scenario, it's 128% of the population. So I'm not exactly sure who we're protecting. What it will look like is this. We see increased incidence of Terry Fox's kind of cancer, osteosarcoma in boys. A U.S. study done by Elise Bassin was done that showed there's 5 times greater incidence of osteosarcoma in American cities that fluoridated versus those that did not. Kidney stones, especially in men because of their different hormones, complements, and osteoarthritis in both men and women. Women, because of their lower body weight and higher water intake, tend to have thyroid disorders. Children not only have learning disorders because fluoride impacts the brain, but it also causes conductive hearing loss because it causes kind of arthritis in the little bones in their ears. So 5-year-old children quite frequently have 90-year-old ears. And also the thyroid suppression leads to learning disabilities. And then we put all together your downregulated thyroid, your sore joints, and your water retention from your blacked up kidneys, and then we have an increased incidence of obesity. I come from Oxford County. We're 100% groundwater dependent. We were naturally high in fluoride, and we have some of the worst health outcomes in all of Canada when it comes to all of these things. It has never once been related to the water chemistry. I'm not exactly sure why not. We definitely have the technology. There seems to be lacking the political will. So we are recommending that Amherstburg not resume artificial water fluoridation for the simple reason that you would be complying with environmental protection legislation, and you would actually be enabling your environmental protection groups to actually track down those that are polluting the environment with atmospheric and waterborne fluorides, that you'd be applying the precautionary principle quite appropriately and quite rightly to the most vulnerable sectors of your population that are unable to speak for themselves and advocate for themselves, and that we can use provincial dollars, not municipal dollars, in a truly targeted way through the Children in Need of Treatment and the Healthy Smiles program. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions at this time? Councilor Davies.
Through you, Mr. Mayor, thank you very much for your presentation. I really appreciated it. I have a number of questions. Certainly, I was aware of some of these things, but you've pointed it out at a much more higher scientific level than I've read in many articles. You did mention the definitive diseases caused by the toxic fluoride, and I'm glad you mentioned that because we have a number of those. The cumulative effect. Now, did I read that it was 50% cumulative over a period of time? That stays in the body, unlike lead?
50% of the fluorides ingested, if your kidneys are in good shape, get excreted through the kidneys. And infants, because the human kidney doesn't fully develop until the age before of 4 years, they retain about 90% of the fluorides that are exposed to from all sources. So that's everything they breathe, everything they eat, everything they ingest, everything that goes through their skin.
Thank you. I did read Professor Joseph Cummings' article on the DNA shifts that have been identified. Could you talk a little bit more about that? Because I thought that was really powerful, that the geneticist was identifying DNA shifts due to fluoride.
Yeah, it's. I hate to bring you back to high school chemistry. I mean, how many of you actually took high school chemistry? You're going to admit to, okay. You remember the periodic table. Well, on the periodic table, it's arranged in a systematic way, and one of the aspects of chemistry that can be reflected of the different elements is something called electronegativity. Electronegativity is a property of some atoms to steal electrons from other places. So electronegativity, another word for it is reactivity, another word for it is oxidative stress. It's oxidation potential. Linus Pauling, the winner of the Nobel Prize, devised a 4-point scale to rank and index this tendency to cause oxidative stress, and it goes from 0 to 4. Fluoride is 3.98. There is nothing more oxidative than fluoride in the known universe. Now, what you would expect to see then is damage according to oxidative stress. So there are many things in the environment, not just fluoride by any means, but fluoride is certainly the most potent agent of oxidative stress that we know of. And we've treated it very cavalier, in a very cavalier way. So one of the things that when you are exposed to lots of oxidative stress is that you have genetic DNA damage, which is why you're hearing a lot these days about the importance of having antioxidants in your diet, the foods that you eat.
So you want to, you know, make sure that you're in proper balance. Of course, we want a balance of oxidative and antioxidative processes. It's what keeps us going through life. If it weren't for oxidation, we wouldn't be able to metabolize energy. But what we're seeing, especially in the present day, is that there are so many sources of oxidative stress in the environment, including emotional stress. If being under stress emotionally sort of shifts your metabolism into the oxidative state so that you can fight off or run away from whatever it is that's stressing you out. So it has a very important role in keeping us alive. But what we're finding is, en masse, is between the things that we're exposed to sort of physically in the environment and our emotional states, you know, a lot of people are really worried and stressed out about finances and whatnot, that we're living in the oxidative end of the realm and we're never coming back and being in balance. So it's one of those kinds of stories. And one of these things that we would see, and this is why that you see huge manifestations in the third generation, but not necessarily in the first and second, because your body is really great at covering up genetic errors. You have a transcription error, you didn't quite copy right, that's okay. You have multiple paths of redundancy to sort of cover. But what we're finding now is we're overwhelming the body's ability to repair its genetic damage, but it doesn't really show up as a disease or a problem until the third generation.
Any further questions?
Just a follow-up to that. So therefore, I just want to get this clear, that certainly I don't want to scare the heck out of people that, you know, we're surrounded by fluoride and that we are. But the natural calcium fluoride, which I think is 0.12 in our water, and Luke can correct me if I'm wrong, that is a natural fluoride that if we remove this artificial additive, our bodies are going to be quite comfortable with that. Is that what you're saying?
Certainly what we see is that calcium very much modifies the toxicity of fluoride. Fluoride in itself can't do much by itself. It sort of has to rely on who else is in the mix with it. So if you have fluoride in the mix with a lot of calcium and a lot of carbonate, like you see in natural groundwater, calcium very much modifies it, and your body is more able to deal with that fluoride. But when fluoride gets put into a low calcium water chemistry that also has, it's very acidic, it has silica fluorides in it, so silica and arsenic and uranium and these other things. So what you find is that fluoride is very much adopts the character of the company it keeps. It should be a verb. It's not a noun. Like, it's not a noun. It's always busy. It's like a kid with ADHD. It's always doing something. So it'll either always be building minerals or it'll be tearing them apart. And we configure them in new and exciting ways, you know, that we really, our bodies have no ability to adapt to, because these are, a lot of them are new to nature compounds and our body has no natural defense to deal with them. Calcium fluoride, we've been hanging out with calcium fluoride for a long, long, long time now. And so our body has different ways of dealing with it. But also remember that the way that we feed our children has changed over time. It used to be that the average age of weaning was 4 years, which is very significant when you consider that the kidney doesn't fully develop until 4 years. So now, I think the average age of breastfeeding is 6 months, and then you're into formula feeding. And again, very critical time, rapid cell development. And even though you may be exposed to high fluorides in utero, you don't have a chance to course correct during that very critical time from birth until age 4. And I think we're seeing it. It's not like Walkerton, where you're fine, you have an exposure, and then you're not fine, and you can say, yes, I know what it was. It was that E. coli or whatever. It's going to sneak around, and it's going to manifest itself in a variety of ways depending on who you are uniquely. And doctors, it's important to remember that doctors are not trained in medical school to learn the signs and symptoms of fluoride toxicity. They are not even aware that they exist. Well, what they are is thyroid suppression, osteoarthritis, arthritis, kidney disorders, cancer, diabetes, heart disease, mood disorders, learning disabilities in children. I can go on and on. And they say, well, that's just about everything. And I say, yes.
But I think we've got to draw a line here. You know, I'm getting stressed out myself with drinking water. I'll be honest.
We don't want to impact your health negatively. The good news is that you are empowered to do something about this. It's not as though by stopping artificial water fluoridation you'll be doing anyone any harm.
Thank you. There's no further questions. Thank you very much, Heather. We appreciate that. Is Lauren here? Lauren Clayton, please.
Good evening.
Good evening.
My name is Lorraine Clayton. I'm a 13-year resident of Amherstburg. I would truly like to thank the presenters ahead of me. I certainly can't add to the substantial presentation that they offered, but as a private resident, I would like to be able to be confident that the water we are drinking is just water. I want to be able to choose the amount of fluoride I ingest. If the water is fluoridated at the municipal level, I can't make a cup of soup without that fluoride, and I would really love to be able to have that choice. So I would like to voice my concern based on some of the information that I've gathered personally over the internet, as a resident of Amherstburg, I hope that our counselors will take all the information leave fluoride out of our water. So that's all I have to say.
Thank you very much for that presentation. Any questions at this time? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Pat Andrews?
Good evening. I'm also a resident of Amherstburg, and everything that I've wanted to say has basically already been said, other than the fact that I would like to also urge council members to take the time to review what has been presented here tonight. It took me all of about an hour to do a search on this information to find almost everything that has been spoken about this evening. So it is very accessible, and I too would like to echo the sentiment of my Doreen that I would like to be able to drink water that is just water without the fluoride added, and I urge you to consider this and vote to stop, or not stop, but not reintroduce fluoride into the water. Thank
you very much, Pat. That brings us to Christine. Christine Moody, please.
Sorry, I was cold. Mayor, councilors, thank you very much for taking the time to listen to everybody here. It's something that's become important to me just recently. I'm not a toxicity specialist, but I do have some information from Dr. Hardy Feinbach, who is the head of preventive dentistry at the University of Toronto, former president of the Canadian Association of Dental Research, and an esteemed panel member of the U.S. National Academies of Sciences Subcommittee on Fluoride in Drinking Water. The National Academy of Sciences is often referred to as the Supreme Court of Science and is an organization that has set up unbiased committees to review scientific issues of concern. So I believe you've all been provided with a full copy of Dr. Leinbach's letter dated November 11th, 2011, and I have a few copies outside if anybody, any other concerned citizens wish to take time to read them. But this is from his report, so I'm quoting his letter, parts of his letter. I have looked at this from all angles, and I have to conclude that fluoridated cities would save money on fluoridation costs, parents would save on costly dental bills treating dental fluorosis, dental decay rates would remain unchanged or even continue to decline, as has been demonstrated in many modern fluoridation cessation studies, and the health of city residents would improve when industrial waste products are no longer added to the drinking water. There is no doubt in my mind that fluoridation has next to no benefit in terms of reduced dental decay. The modern literature is clear on that. Fluoridation cessation studies fail to show an increase in dental decay. In fact, cavity rates continue to drop. Dr. Lineback goes on to say, to me, dental fluorosis is a biomarker for fluoride poisoning. I have personally conducted years of funded research at the University of Toronto on the topic of fluorosis and fluoride poisoning and bone effect of fluoride intake. A bone study for which we received national funding comparing hip bones of people who live in Toronto, which has been fluoridated since 1963, to bones of people from Montreal who have never had fluoridated water, suggesting disturbing negative changes in the bone quality of Torontonians. This is not good. The National Academy of Sciences Committee examined the literature on the effects of fluoride on bone up until 2006. Since that time, there have been many more studies to confirm the link between fluoridation and bone changes, as well as a link to bone cancer. I am also the co-author of studies that show that too much fluoride accumulation in the dentine of teeth causes its properties to change as well. Fluoride has not been shown to be safe and effective. In fact, as more and more peer-reviewed studies on fluoride toxicity appear in the literature, it has become clear to me that the pendulum is certainly shifting to not safe and no longer effective. As a practicing dentist, I have been diagnosing and treating patients with dental fluorosis for close to 20 years. My research on dental fluorosis shows fluoridation significantly increases the number of patients seeking expensive cosmetic repairs. No one in public health has ever accounted for the added costs in treating dental fluorosis when considering the cost-benefit ratio of fluoridation. I thank you all for taking the time to listen to me and the others tonight who feel very strongly about this. I hope that once you study the facts, you will consider discontinuing fluoridating our water.
Thank you very much, Christine. Appreciate that. I would at this time entertain a motion from the council to receive the delegations that were here. Councillor Davies?
Yes, I'd like to receive the delegation's reports, and if
we can bring forward the notice that you have at this time. But I want to receive the delegates. If they're supported, please. Councillor Pilon supports that motion. All in favor? Motion is carried, and I would at this time request council to bring forward the notice of motion from Councillor Davies, which is the 27-1, I believe. You can bring forward it at now. I think this would be the appropriate time.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I, Councillor Davies, hereby provide notice of motion to the town of Amherstburg, or a motion to Amherstburg, that a moratorium be put on a future purchase and installation of new municipal water fluoridation equipment and further purchase and use of fluoridation chemical known as hydrofluorosilic acid, H2S1F6, containing silico fluoride, and further that administration be directed to request the government jurisdictions, including Health Canada, the Ontario Ministry of Labour and Environment, evidence ensuring that the town employees and any other working with the hydrofluoric silic acid process are not put in harm's way as required by the Ontario Health and Safety Act 1990.
There's support for that motion. Councillor Davies supports that motion. Discussion, if any, at this time. Councillor Pouget, I'm sorry. Is there any discussion at this time? Councillor Pilon.
There's only one discussion. I know we have a report coming from our engineer. When do you expect that coming forward, Luke?
Mr. Mayor, as I indicated before, that report should be with us by next week.
And I guess this is just a notice of motion you're putting up. So we will. You're looking for the motion now. You know what? I think I concur with it, but they spent money on to do this investigation. I really think we should hold it until we get this report back and then deal with it.
Councillor Davies.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. A couple of points, but first to comment on what Councillor Pilon just said. That report is to see how much it's going to cost us to put in the equipment to carry on. It isn't about whether it's safe or not. I think if we make the decision whether or not we want fluoridation, we don't have to worry about whether or not we're going to have to pay $100,000 or $150,000 to have it installed, because it'll be a moot point. And I think that pretty well everything that was were my concerns, and have been for at least, well, since I had brown hair, but for three decades, have been very well articulated. And many cities in Canada have decided to stop or reject fluoridation. Calgary, Dryden, Lakeshore, Niagara region, region of Waterloo, Thunder Bay, Quebec City, Vancouver, and it goes on. Europe has pretty well stopped it altogether based on their own recognized research. Fluoridation is the legal and financial responsibility of municipalities, and this is where we have to pay attention. It's the legal and financial responsibility of municipalities or regions, not the Canadian government, not the provincial government. Why is that? It is not mandated, and councillors or voters can end it democratically with reason. I think we've heard more than enough solid, peer-reviewed, and excellent scientific information that didn't exist in the 40s and the 50s. And finally, Section 19 of the Ontario Safe Drinking Water Act assigns responsibility for the safety of drinking water chemicals to municipalities and their councillor members. Where failure to comply with Section 19 of the SDWA is an offence and could result in the prosecution of an individual or a corporation, including a town, or both. Therefore, municipal councillors can be responsible and liable for any harm caused through water fluoridation. There is already evidence of it in many other communities, who that is why they're backing out. And I think that we've got a very limited time before it's going to be law, and we could be responsible if, in fact, we choose to spend $100,000 to $150,000 on a piece of equipment that, in 6 months later, we're going to stop using. Why would we want to spend taxpayers' dollars on something that, in fact, has evidence of proven harm? So I would urge councillors to vote to support my motion, because if we don't, whether or not this report's coming through, if we vote against my motion, then sure, we need to find out how much it's going to cost us to put it in. But if we vote for my motion, it's a moot point, and we don't have to go to that expenditure.
That's been said. That's been said already. Councillor Sutton?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. There's certainly passionate arguments on both sides of the fence, that's for sure, in terms of the fluoridation issue. This needs some clarification in terms of the intent of the motion, because the first part of it talks about basically continuing our self-imposed moratorium right now because we aren't fluoridating the water as we speak, but it doesn't really give a time limit whether we're suggesting that's lifetime or for further study. And then the second part of the motion goes on to, you know, asking the various departments in Health Canada to ensure that anybody who's handling fluoride is safe in a municipal environment. Well, if we weren't putting fluoride in, I would, you know, kind of safely assume that nobody would be handling those. So I just wanted some clarification in terms of the intent of the moratorium in terms of length, and the second part of the motion in terms of if we weren't putting fluoride in, why that would be necessary.
Thank you.
No, go ahead.
Thank you,
no problem.
Mr. Mayor, through you to Councillor Sutton. The moratorium is certainly, I mean, I would like to see it passed that we put a moratorium on it, or that we end it altogether. Because I have complete confidence that we're not going to find any research to the opposite. So that moratorium would be put on future purchase of installation of the water fluoridation equipment until we know it's not unsafe. The concern for that second part of the motion was, if in fact I just wanted to point out that the people who are having to handle this are at tremendous risk for doing it, and if you look at the WMIS accompanies the chemical, it's a horrendous the crustacean damage. And it was pointed out a number of other things, that the contamination. So it was kind of like, if you want to think about just waiting, then we have to move forward and protect any of the workers who might be having to handle this.
Just a follow-up. So if I'm hearing you correctly, Councillor Davies, it's a moratorium at this stage.
That's what she's asking.
Yes.
But the issue is being more definitive with the moratorium on. How long is this moratorium? It's until it's been proven that it is safe, is that what you're suggesting? And that's to get a clear understanding of what your motion is. Anyone else? Deputy Mayor Sutherland, followed by someone, have a hand up. Councillor DePasquale.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. We've certainly had a lot of discussion back and forth on this very matter, and I, for one, I've pretty much made up my mind as of just from what I've heard this evening. We've heard both sides of it, but I would have to agree with Councillor Davies' moratorium and notice of motion, and in fact the motion, and I'll certainly be supporting it. Thank you.
Councillor DePasquale.
Thanks, Mr. Mayor. I also agree with Carolyn. I think we should go through with it. We've heard enough discussion. There's other communities that have done it. Let's get on with it and move on.
On the motion, Councillor Pino.
Yeah, just real quickly, and the reason I brought up about the study that's going on is I'm interested in knowing at what rate we were putting it in or we're going to go and put in.
But that information could be given to
that's
us.
All I, that's the only that's, real that's reason, because no I definitely, I do agree with
on the motion, on the motion. All in favor? All in favor of the motion, Carolyn? Opposed? Motion carried unanimously.
I was looking up something.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Moving on to the report.
That brings us to Recreation Culture Parks, a report by Dean Culver regarding Centennial Park update.
On Dean's report.
Maybe the deputy mayor would like to stay on a little longer.
No, sorry. Come on, Bob. Let's get on with it. Dean?
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. This report is a simple follow-up to the delegation that presented on January 23rd. Dave Scott led it. It was the committee to preserve and repair Centennial Park. This simply indicates that we will be moving the bleachers back to Centennial Park. The storage lockers back to Centennial Park, and we have created a plan to remediate the football field as soon as weather permits.
And that's all included in the report for council?
Correct.
With council's pleasure relative there too. Councillor DePasquale.
Thanks, Mr. Mayor. I move that the report be received for our information.
It's been moved, supported by Councillor Sutton. Further discussions? Hearing none, all in favor? Opposed? Motion is carried.
Item 9.2, report by Dean Culver regarding mold abatement at Victoria Street Cultural Center.
Mr. Mayor and Council, this is a follow-up report regarding the mold that was discovered during the renovation of the Victoria Street Community Center. At the last meeting where this was discussed, Council indicated they would like more information. Since that time, extensive invasive discovery has gone on in addition to the renovations to meet the deadlines that were initially stated. The remediation work, mold was discovered in the south wall, north wall, and remediation has occurred and is carrying on currently.
Any discussion relative to that report? Councillor Davey, followed by Councillor Sutton.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Through you. Do we know if there's if the whole wall has to be torn down completely, demolish is a pretty strong word,
I think what we can do, Steve, would you be kind enough to respond on that particular aspect? Very important.
Yeah, the interior structure of the north wall has been removed and is being replaced this week. The south wall was removed and new construction materials were put in its place. At the end of last week, if you drive by, you'll be able to see that the wall has been replaced.
Okay. Councillor Sutton, followed by Councillor Pouget.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Through you, I mean, there's no doubt we've got to do the work. We've got a tenant waiting to use that building, and certainly it's a tenant that does a lot for this community. I just wanted some clarification, Dean, around the financial implications of absorbing it as part of our budget. Is that already in the current budget, or will this add on to our deliberations of tomorrow?
This will be in addition to the initial budget was for renovation only.
Okay. Thank you.
Councillor Davies. Councillor Pouget.
My question's been answered.
Okay. Councillor Pino.
Thanks, Mr. Mayor. Steve, when you mentioned interior demolition, are you taking it right down to the 2x4s, or is that just the inner wall gone?
No, the 2x4s were taken out as well, and the walls rebuilt.
I think what we have to understand here is there's mold in it. It's been there for years, so you can't just do a little bit. You had to take it all out. You'd just be prolonging the problem. Councillor Sutton.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move receipt of the report and further that council approve the recommended method for eliminating the mold from the building, including the demolition and reconstruction of the north and south walls, and that the associated costs be recognized and absorbed within the Rec and Culture Department's capital budget.
There's support for that motion. Councillor DePasquale supports that motion. Further questions? Hearing none. All in favor? Opposed? Motion is carried.
Information Technology 12.1, a report by Dave Carpenter regarding Technology Use Policy 2012 Revision.
That's the Council's information. Councillor Puget.
That Council adopt the Technology Use Policy as revised for 2012.
There's support for that. Deputy Mayor Sutherland supports that motion. All in favor? Opposed? Motion is carried.
Item 14.1 under Engineering and Infrastructure, report by Luz Orlanga regarding the Bondi Bastion Municipal Drain Notice from George and Montura Fusapi. Request for culvert replacement.
Your Worship, move the Council receive the report from Luz Orlanga, dated January 10, 2012, concerning the Bondi Bastion Municipal Drain and the notices from George and Montura Fusapi regarding the culvert being out of repair. Further, the council approve the request for drain repairs from George and Ventura Basaba, and that maintenance work be undertaken to the Bondi Bastion drain, consisting of replacing the existing culvert pursuant to the dimensions and elevations provided in the current 1990 drainage report for this drain.
They're supported for that motion. Councillor Puget supports that motion. All in favor? Motion is carried.
14.2, report by Luz Erlanger regarding Laura Malosh Municipal Drain Notice from Loris Calvano, request for drain maintenance.
There a motion? Any discussions? Councillor Pilon?
Thanks, Mr. Mayor. I'll move the motion I received from Luz Erlanger and further that council approve the request for the drain repairs from Loris Calvano and that maintenance work be undertaken to the Laura Malosh Municipal Drain consisting of bottom cleaning and brushing. Pursue the dimensions and elevations provided in the current 1961 drainage report and schedule for this drain.
Is there a supporter for that motion? Deputy Mayor Sutherland. Discussions. Councillor Pilon, followed by Councillor Puget.
Thanks, Mr. Mayor. I'm just wondering, like, that's a relatively old schedule. 1961, like, I don't know, has there been, is that up to date enough, Luke?
Mr. Mayor, we will look at that, and I don't see a recommendation for reviewing the schedule, so it must still be valid.
Councilor Puget.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Through you to Lou. I see that Bertamond was an adjacent landowner. Would we be able to collect any funds from them for any work on this project?
Mr. Mayor, the current schedule actually depicts all of the people that are affected and the land's affected. So if the individual is going to be affected, they are shown in that schedule and in the plan itself.
So whoever owned the property would be the benefiting factor there. Anyone else on the motion? All in favor? Opposed? Motion is carried.
Item 14.3, report by Luz Erlanga regarding the Shoreline Municipal Drain Notice from Margaret Knapp, request for drain maintenance.
Councillor Sutton.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Move receipt and concurrence.
Been moved. Their supporter, Deputy Mayor Sutherland. Any discussions? All in favor? Motion is carried.
Item 14.4, a report by Luz Erlanger regarding the 7th Line Municipal Drain Notice from Rodney Laramie, request for drain maintenance.
Again, with the council's pleasure, Deputy Mayor Sutherland.
I move receipt of the report with concurrence.
Council supported by Councilor Pilon. Discussions? Hearing none. All in favor? Opposed? Motion is carried.
Reports under Treasury, 16.1, a report by Paul Beneteau regarding tax arrears extension agreement for 7 Friar Street.
Council's pleasure. Councillor Puget.
The council received the report regarding an extension agreement between the town of Amherstburg and the owner of 7 Friar Street as submitted by the treasurer. That bylaw 2012-12 be in a bylaw to authorize the execution of an amendment to a tax arrears extension agreement pursuant to Section 378 of the Municipal Act 2001 be taken as having been read 3 times, that the mayor and clerk be authorized to sign the same thereto, and further, that the mayor and clerk be authorized to enter into the extension agreement between the town and the property owner on behalf of the town with the terms outlined in the said agreement.
There is support for that motion. Councilor Sutton supports that motion. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor? Opposed? Motion is carried. Next report.
16.2, report by Paul Beneteau regarding demand loan from CIBC.
What's the council's pleasure relative to that? Deputy Mayor Sutherland.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move the report prepared by Paul Treasurer regarding a demand loan from CIBC be received, and further, bylaw 2012-10 be read 3 times, and that the mayor and clerk be authorized to sign the same thereto.
And moved. Supported by Councilor Pino. Any discussions? Hearing none, all in favor? Motion is carried.
Brings us to Clerks 18.1, a report by Brenda Percy regarding sale of 45 Lake Beach Road, Amherstburg.
Councilor DePasquale.
Mr. Mayor, I move that the report by Brenda Percy, dated January 30th, 2012, regarding the sale of 45 Lake Beach Road, Amherstburg, be received, and council accept the offer of $4,000 plus all applicable costs for the surplus property located adjacent to 45 Lake Beach Road, Amherstburg, and for the administration be directed to proceed with the sale in accordance with the town's sale of surplus land policy.
On the motion by Councilor DePasquale, supported by Councilor Pinal. Discussions? Councilor Sutton.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm going to take it that this is the first offer on this piece of property. Would that be correct?
I'm sure it would be.
The owners approached the municipality asking to purchase the land.
So there's no value to the town to hold on to it, but yet at the same time, we should be trying to get the appraised value for it as well. Should we not?
That would be at the discretion of council.
I mean, I think we send it back and just say, look, I mean, here's the appraised value of the property. It's and try and get the most bang for our buck. It just makes more sense to me.
Councillor Davies, followed by Councillor Puget.
I support Councillor Sutton's position on that. We certainly have gotten burned in the past, and this is something I think we really should be looking at and getting the best dollars. Mm-hmm. And so we are, in fact, trying to be very frugal and give back to the taxpayers, so it shouldn't be the first offer.
Councillor Puget, if you would.
Thank you, Mayor Hurst. I too concur with both Councillor Davies and Councillor Sutton's opinions. And I just, as a point of clarification, are they willing to pay all legal costs associated with that? It states that?
Yeah. Okay. Councillor DePasquale.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I tend to agree with my colleagues. If we could get more money for it, and I guess the only way we're going to find out is to try, but I did read the clerk's report, and it did, the appraisal was about $6,000, and you're probably going to have more than that for legal fees, et cetera, which they are willing to pick up. So think about it. I know where you're coming from, but.
Councilor Pino.
Thanks, Mr. Mayor. I concur with the recommendation for the simple reason is this is water frontage. It only in front of this 45 Lake Beach Road. Nobody else is going to buy it because they won't have access to it. So it's really useless to try to advertise and get more money. It was appraised at around $6,000, but we also, and we got an offer at $4,000 plus all costs. So, I'm quite confident that We're close to the value, and if you want to pursue it, I guess council can do it, but the time spent and everything else, if we have to get a lawyer involved, you're going to eat up that $2,000 more. And anyway, when you stop and think about appraised value, there's houses out there appraised at so much, and they don't sell for that today. Nothing's hitting appraised value, so just consider that.
Just before I go to Councillor Davies, Brenda would like a clarification.
Just for clarification, Councillor Sutton, are you suggesting that the individuals, the Burns that approached us, we asked them for more or to advertise it to the general public?
To the person.
Okay.
The former.
Yeah. Councillor Davies.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I appreciate what you're saying, and that may be in fact true, but I think it's the optics of it. If in fact we sold it for four and it ended up being valued at 8 or 9 or 10, and then those folks sold their house and they increased their house value because of the beach property, it's not going to look good. And it is public property. It's not our property to guess it. I don't know how much an evaluation costs. I don't know why there'd have to be legal involvement. Just a matter of finding out how much it's valued.
It's already been assessed.
The property's already been assessed, valued, and it's been valued at $6,587. So what the Burns are, I've advised them of what it was appraised at, and what they're offering council is $4,000, plus they would cover all legal fees, the reference plan, the appraisal to be done, all of the above.
And I think what council, you could talk this forever, people. Listen, you're talking $2,000. I think what council could do, they could do simply this, say, hey, to the people living there, well, we want the appraised value of $6,000. That's $2,000 over what they're willing to pay plus the cost of the legal fee that is going to be incurred here. So they'll just say no. They could say, and you're debating this in an open session here, people.
Yeah.
We don't want it. Fine. It's only in front of their property. Nobody else has got access to it, so they can utilize it as much as they want, and you get nothing. So you look at it both ways, and it's not a healthy thing to discuss things like this in an open session. You just show your hand all the time. On the motion. Did you read the motion back?
That the report be received, that council accept the offer of $4,000 plus all applicable costs for the surplus property located adjacent to 45 Lake Beach Road, and further that administration be directed to proceed with the sale in accordance with the town's sale of surplus land policy.
On the motion, all in favor? All in favor? Opposed? Motion is lost. Looking for direction. Looking for direction, people. Councillor Sutton.
I move we send an offer back of $6,000 to the Burns.
They're supportive for that motion. Council Pouget supports that motion. All in discussions? Councillor DePasquale.
Yeah, since we're going that road, I think we should ask for the legal fees too.
What's included in there? It would be included.
$6,000 plus.
Yes, of course. You know, for the councilor?
Oh, no, I've always got to have something to say.
Go ahead.
Well, you know what, we are putting ourselves in a position now that they may say, we don't need it, we can use it free. You know, like $4,000 with all legals. It's going to cost them $6,000 anyway. Why do you think they're going to spend another $2,000? Like, it's unvalued property to us, to any resident, really. It's not like we have a sewer line, water line, or any infrastructure going there. It's just simply waterfront, and you know what? I don't, whatever.
On the motion. Brenda, if you would, please.
I'd just like to clarify the reasons for the Burns coming forward and asking to purchase the property. They do wish to fix the retaining wall and legally build the dock so that it's not on town property. They're using their own property.
Okay. On the motion. All in favor? Opposed? Motion again is lost.
Give it to him.
All in favor of that last motion?
Did you vote in favor, Bert?
No.
No?
All in favor, that's three.
Okay.
And opposed? Opposed, Bart? You had your hand up, Bart? Oh, sorry, yeah. No, he had it up before.
Sorry.
He got one eye, but it's a good one. I can count.
Let's have a recorded vote on that one. That,
if, see, that's where you miss. That's where you miss. Okay.
Yeah, I call for a recorded vote on that.
Can I ask for a recorded vote on the first motion?
Yes, that's, you can't.
Go there first then.
Excuse me.
Yours is lost too.
Mr. Mayor,
sure.
Councilor Pilon has a great suggestion or comment here. If, in fact, we can go back after the vote and the motion has been lost at this one, why can't it be referred back to the very first one?
You could do it to every motion, and yeah. I don't think you can do that.
No.
I think what you have to do, that motion is lost, you're going to have to introduce a new motion or whatever.
You would have to ask for the recorded vote immediately after that vote or before that vote.
Yeah.
But now that there's been another vote on the table, you can only ask for the recorded vote for the last one.
But it's been voted on already, too.
But it's right after. We haven't put another one on the table.
Motion on the floor.
Councilor David.
I'll make a motion.
No?
Could I entertain that we rethink between the two issues of the 4,000 and the 6,000 and ask them to go back and renegotiate a price? And
is that a motion?
That is a motion.
Okay, there's support for that.
I'll rescind my ask for a recorded vote in that case and defer to my colleague.
Is that a supporter for that motion? Councillor Puget supports that motion. Discussions, and we've had you don't need a long, please.
You know, because really, I mean, we have a $2,000 discrepancy between its value and what we were willing to sell it for. I appreciate that these folks want to use it and fix it up and put, but you know, it will in fact enhance the capital of their property, and good for them. But it needs to be good for us as well. And I think that's the point. It's not so much this particular property. It's the principle of when we let go surplus property, we should be trying to do the best we can for the taxpayers of our town to enhance what we bring forward to them. So that's really
the principle. On the motion, please. Any discussion further? All in favor? I'm sorry, Bart, you got your hand up for what?
Yeah,
please.
I'm sorry.
Are you, if you don't read it, I can't see it.
I think we just got to use a little common sense here. That's all. Nobody else can buy it. Bob said that. Nobody else. It's no good to anybody else. So obviously, we don't want to sell the land because nobody else is going to buy it unless they decide to up the ante and give us more money for it.
On the motion, all in favor? All in favor of the motion? Opposed? Good Lord.
Oh, yeah. Negotiate a price.
Why didn't you call for recorded vote? In the matter, call for recorded vote.
I'll call for recorded vote.
This is ridiculous.
Councillor Davies?
Support.
Councillor DePasquale?
You read that again? Oh, sure.
No, there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, that's fine.
Councillor Davies moved, Councillor Puget seconded that administration go back to the Burns for another, to ask them for another offer in return to council.
I support.
Councillor Pilon?
Non-concurrence.
Councillor Puget?
Support.
Deputy Mayor Sutherland?
Opposed.
Councillor Sutton?
Support.
Mayor Hurst?
Support.
Motion carries.
Next item.
That brings us to consent reports. There's six items before council.
What's your pleasure? Councilor Sutton.
Motion to receive items 1 through 3 and 5 and 6. I'd like to deal with number 4 separately.
There's a supporter for that motion.
I'll support it, Mr.
Deputy Mayor Sutherland. Discussions? Councilor Puget.
I would like to speak on number 5 and 6.
Okay.
So I don't
know
if you want to do it separately.
You can bring them up. You'll
sure.
Do the.
So we'll just go 1 through 3.
Exactly. Okay.
Have a vote on receiving them?
Yep. All in favor? If that's okay with the mover?
Yes.
All in favor? Motion is carried. Councillor Sutton, you wanted to speak on?
Yeah, it looks like we've had a request and there's a report where administration seems to be in concurrence, so I move that we send correspondence to the River Lights Festival that we're in agreement with their request.
Just concurrence with the request, yeah. All in favor?
Well, you support it.
Support.
You support it. Councilor Pino? All in favor? Motion is carried. Councilor Puget?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Regarding the Greater Essex County District School Board, they sent a letter stating that they expected their agreement to be followed. Oh, we're still up here? Oh, I'm doing the wrong one.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry. Thank you.
So motion to receive 5 and 6 then, the Water Plan Annual Report and the Just Drains Report?
Yes.
Been moved.
Support.
Supported by Councilor Pinal. All in favor? Motion is carried.
Consent correspondence, items 1 through 9.
With the Council's pleasure. Councilor Puget.
That we receive the correspondence 1, 2, 3, 4, 7, 8, and 9.
Okay. Is there a supporter for that?
I'll support
Deputy Mayor Sutherland supports that motion. Discussions? Not all in favor. Opposed? That's carried. And you want to discuss separately 5 and
6.
And I think it's 6. You may.
Thank you. The letter that we received from the Greater Essex County District School Board reiterated the fact that they expect us to follow their agreement concerning the three parks, including Centennial Park and the track and field complex and the tennis courts. And so I would ask if that could go to budget, be referred to our budget session.
Just let's be very clear when you're talking about the agreement with the school. Could you just restate what you had said, please?
Yes, the Greater Essex County District School Board sent us a letter
mm-hmm.
regarding they wanted us to understand the commitment, including the agreement between the three park, the town of Amherstburg and the three parks. That they use, including Centennial Park and the track and field complex and the tennis courts. And I would ask that that be referred to our budget session. It's part of the agreement. I have it here.
Go ahead, Councilor Sutton.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I believe that the key is the last paragraph of that letter where it refers to the 1997 agreement requesting that the bleachers be returned, the locker made available to the school teams at Centennial Park has been the case in the past, and that the park be maintained as in the past as per our agreement. And I believe Dean's earlier report dealt with that and the plans for doing so as part of the rec and culture budget during the coming year.
And I think that's very important that you understand what that agreement between the town of Amherstburg and the school board is, and it's not the tennis court. Yeah, go ahead.
The school board sent us this entire copy,
yeah.
And it says, including the agreement, and it says, be it therefore agreed that the board shall pay to the town the following sum, and then it just says, for H. Murray Smith Centennial Park track and field complex and tennis courts and the Jones and Waggle parks. And that, even though they paid up to 2020, they state very emphatically that this entire agreement from before is still forms part of this agreement. And I spoke to Penny Allen today, and she said that the school board would be very happy to appear before council at the next budget session if they need clarification on that matter. And that's what I'm asking for, is for this to go to budget.
Further discussion relative thereto.
Yeah, no, it's already there.
Is it in order?
Yeah. And we'll, you'll be having a lengthy discussion with that tomorrow, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
So they'll go to budget?
It's fair. But I think it's important to understand what that agreement talks about, and don't lose sight of the fact of what the focus for the school board is. I think that's all. But we can talk about that tomorrow in budget, because I'm sure we're going to have a long discussion with respect to that issue itself. Councilor Puget.
A letter from Annette and Stuart Brown regarding all that drain. Mr. and Mrs. Brown had a number of questions regarding this Olette drain, and I just wondered if these questions could be answered, and they would receive a response before we deal with the Olette drain.
Are you familiar with that, Lou?
Mr. Mayor, I'm familiar with the Olette drain. I'm not familiar with the questions, but I will look into it, and
sure,
we will get answers to those individuals.
Very good. Okay. Next item. Yeah, we can receive those two, along with, of course, a request of ensuring that the Browns are contacted, and you can respond back to us at our next meeting.
I'll move that.
And move their support for that. Deputy Mayor Sutherland, all in favor? Motion is carried.
That brings us to consent other minutes, and there are four sets of minutes before council.
Council's pleasure relative thereto. Deputy Mayor Sutherland.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'll move the receipt of the four items in question.
Been moved, supported by Councilor Pienaar. Further discussions? Hearing none, all in favor? Motion is carried.
Consent correspondence, item 22.1, request from Girl Guides of Canada regarding proclamation of Guide Scout Week, February 19th to the 26th.
It's Council's pleasure relative to that request. Councilor Sutherland, Deputy Mayor Sutherland.
Well, thank you. I move that the correspondence from the Girl Guides of Canada be received, and further, the Council proclaim the week of February 19th to 26th, 2012, as Guide Scout Week.
Been moved. You're supported. Councillor Sutton supports that motion. Further discussion? All in favor? Opposed is carried. And certainly I will read the proclamation. Be it known to whom these presents do concern, whereas the mission of Girl Guides of Canada is to enable girls to be confident, resourceful, and courageous to make a difference in the world, and whereas for 100 years, Girl Guides of Canada has been a trailblazing organization advocating for girls and women, offering them opportunities to learn valuable skills and meet the challenges that they face in their lives head on. Be it resolved, therefore, that the Town of Amherstburg gratefully recognizes Girl Guides of Canada, of Canada's valuable contribution to the well-being of our community by proclaiming the week of February the 19th to the 26th of 2012 to be Girl Guide Scout Week.
Brings us to other minutes, traffic minutes from the meeting of November the 16th.
Councilor Pilon.
I move that council concur with the traffic committee's recommendation to have the Amherstburg Police Service conduct additional enforcement on the housing street from Pickering to Low Side Road.
They're supportive for that. Councilor Puget supports that motion. Discussions? Councilor Pilon.
Just real briefly, is we had a letter from a resident with concerns, and in fact, the letter was to reduce the speed on the road, but the traffic committee felt that more enforcement would solve the problem.
Councilor Puget.
Thank you, Mayor Hurst. Further to that, that is a very narrow road, and we do have a trail along that road. So it is important that we keep the residents safe and the pedestrians safe, too.
Okay. On the motion, all in favor? Opposed, motion is carried.
Unfinished business items.
Councillor DePasquale, followed by Councillor Pugier.
Thanks, Mr. Mayor. Just a question through you to Lou. Is it, wanted to ask if how we're progressing with the flooding report.
And Mr. Mayor, the administration is still looking at various options in regards to the flooding report and the number of assist mechanisms and financial aids that may be made available.
When do you think you'll be coming back with a report about that?
As Pamelot had indicated before, the City of Windsor took nearly a year to get their information available.
How long do you think it'll be for
it's
us?
It's likely going to be another 3 to 4 months.
Okay. So at least the council will be able to know that. And answer your question, Councillor DePasquale. Councillor Pugier.
Thank you, Mayor Hurst. I just wondered if council could have an update on broadband, if it could be brought back to us. I know that council voted for broadband to go over to Boblo, but there was a time limit, and I think that they extended it till July. I have received a number of calls regarding that, and whether or not it was, if the project was even started or if it has been completed, and I don't have any answers.
You want an update? Certain. The administration will do that. Anything else under unfinished business? Councillor DePasquale.
Thanks, Mr. Mayor. Just one more through you to Steve Brown in reference to the smoke bylaw situation. Is there any movement on that, Steve? Or?
Currently, we're investigating putting language in the building bylaw with respect to the installation of solid fuel burning appliances. We are also looking at putting language in the zoning bylaw concerning setbacks for large industrial type units, particularly that would be used in the county. That would be part of our house cleaning bylaw. As far as zoning goes, we have quite a few things that we're looking at in the zoning bylaw to add. So that we're making good progress on it.
Still under unfinished business? Anyone else? If not, next item?
New business?
Anything under new business? Deputy Mayor Sutherland.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. There's nowhere in the agenda for me to include this other than in new business, so I hope you will indulge me, please. This message is to all management and staff of the town of Amherstburg. It's been brought to my attention that certain comments that I made during an interview with CBC last week regarding the absence of the CAO and the fact that I was one of the ones that opposed the person that we have in place, Mr. Levac. I didn't feel that we needed that, and the comments that I made, I feel very strongly that there was never any intent in my part in any way, shape, or form to demean anybody that works for the town of Amherstburg or demean the employee's qualifications. The intent of my statement was simply to infer that we didn't need a replacement at this time, as all staff are more than capable of performing their duties as competently as they always have. And to anyone that I have personally offended, I humbly apologize. Thank you.
Still under new business.
Report from in-camera session.
The report from in-camera sessions, I just wish to report that we had an in-camera session and we dealt with three items. One was collective agreement as it relates to the IBEWs, an understanding there of Local 636. The other item was the negotiations with our full-time fighting staff, and the other one was dealing with a personnel issue. And that brings us now to any notices of motion. Are there any notices of motion? Councillor Davis.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor. I just want to put a notice of motion in to be ready to repeal the rebate bylaw that we have standing at the moment, and direct administration to draft a proposal for a new bylaw in conjunction with the Heritage Committee.
Any other notices of motion at this time? Hearing none, that brings us to the confirmatory bylaw.
Bylaw 2012-13, a bylaw to confirm the resolutions and of the meetings held January 24th, 30th, and February 6th.
Councilor Sutton.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Move that bylaw 2012-13, being a bylaw to confirm all resolutions of municipal council meetings held on January 24th, 30th, and February 6th, 2012, be read three times, finally passed, and the mayor and clerk be authorized to sign same thereto.
There is support for that motion. Councilor DeFasquale supports that motion. Further discussions? If not, all in favor? Opposed, it's carried. And that then brings us to.
Move to adjourn.
It's been moved by Deputy Mayor Sutherland, supported by Councilor Davies. All in favor? Motion is carried. Thank you.